Oh,
that's the beginning of town run over. That's the beginning of town run over this rainy Saturday afternoon, 4th of April 1970. The beginning of town run over this rainy Saturday afternoon, the 4th of April 1970. Town run over. This continuation of the talk over at Mr. Tuck Mack's, Ms. Mack, Danny, and Faye and me on this rainy Saturday afternoon, the 4th of April 1970, beginning of Channel 1 over.
The second. Brown's birthday was the day ahead of Chuck, the second
day. Oh, really?
Well, I saw him this morning.
You saw Henry?
Yeah, he came out this morning.
His
I was up at the little doctor's. They was putting up a fence, and he's got a Cuban up there. They're going to, I think I told you, they're going to start in the cattle business on a small scale.
No.
And see if it'll pay off, and then they're going to expand.
Now, what do you call a little doctor?
Our little, used to be our little place up there. Just you come up the hill before you get to our mailbox, it'd be on your left coming up the road there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, who's over there?
Dr. Rubin.
Oh.
Doctor. What's this? Jeff Rubin.
He is a doctor.
Yeah, and his father's a, what, a restaurant man in Lyme, and say he's pretty wealthy.
Oh.
The Jews.
Jeff
One of y'all are Jews, I hope. I don't know how to say it. There's some just as good as Jews as anybody else.
Well, now you already put your foot in, huh?
Yeah. I call him a Jew.
Well, he's a smart one, I tell you.
Right.
I never saw a doctor get out and work like he works. Mm-hmm. He gets out and does what you call real manual labor. He
yeah.
really has improved.
He's been out a number of
years. He brought up right.
He really.
Well, now what about the Cuban?
He's in with him.
Yeah.
And Jeff's going to front. The boys had the experience. This Cuban.
Yeah.
He told me the name, but I can't remember no names. Carlos some.
Yeah.
And they're fencing and cross fencing a little place.
Yeah.
They don't have more than 6 or 8 or 10 acres up there.
Yeah.
And they've got, Jeff has already got a plan to pasture grass. I'm adding they're going to have to feed, because that Cuban asked me this morning if I knew where, if we could buy molasses around here. I said, yeah. But I can't tell you exactly where. And he seemed, Jeff told me that his daddy had a large number of Santa Gertrudis cattle in Cuba. And it seemed they lost out of some. This Cuban is here going to school taking an agricultural course. Of course, I think not to deal with food and cows much, you want to keep on doing it.
Well, evidently they must be good,
Chuck,
because you know Man Bailey brought that Cuban up here. You said
it
was one of the finest cattlemen you ever saw work with.
Man Bailey brought a Cuban up here.
Yeah, that was helped catch those old big outlaw steers.
Yeah.
And his boy, his name was Carlos Gonzalez. And he said in Cuba, if the boss sent you off to some guy, you better bring him back or not come back. He didn't plan to get him. Yeah.
If you raise hogs, everybody would have a few hogs.
Yeah.
And some cattle, and do a little farming. Now, how many people every now and then would do a little moonshining just to raise a little money? That was cash money.
Yeah, but there wasn't so much of it because there wasn't so much sale for it. And you take one or two moonshines in the country, and then there's always hauling it in. Baker County, I think, they claim used to be one of the biggest moonshine counties in the country.
Yeah.
Now, all the old farmers would, maybe one of them would have a little rig to make it, you know, or say one out of five, and when you got yours ready, you'd either haul it to him, or he'd come get it, or come set up on your place, and make it for you at a normal fee, or part of the whiskey, whichever way you want to work.
Now, I never heard of that arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say that again, Scott.
If, say it's three or four or five farmers in here, maybe one out of the five would have a little still.
Yes.
Which, back in them time, consists of either old drum.
Yeah.
And a piece of galvanized pipe, and later on they got to get in better equipment, copper pipe.
Were galvanized to it?
Yeah, but later we found out that, you know, you put your mash in a container and boil it, and it boils up and it goes through a pipe, and that pipe is run through water, which condenses it.
Yeah.
And I don't believe it would be in any danger of getting enough of that zinc or anything, but and I imagine the majority of it was made that way. The later years, they got what they call thumper steels, and I can't explain that to you because I've never seen one. But then they got copper steels, and then somebody thought about silting it through charcoal.
Yeah.
And they just made a better grade of whiskey.
But now one man would have a little rig.
Yeah. And you could make arrangements with him to make yours up.
Over at his house?
His house. I know they didn't make it at the house. They got up in the woods.
Yeah.
It was illegal.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean over his place.
Yeah. Or he'd come to your place.
Oh, would he?
Yeah. And shoot, you could put all of it in a one-horse wagon, you know, and move it around. And
sure.
Wouldn't like a large operation.
Yeah.
It'd take nothing to move it.
You know, I never heard of that.
You never heard of homemade whiskey?
Oh, yes. I've helped make it.
Yeah.
But I never heard of having a little rig and going around from place to place.
Let me tell you an experience I had. I had some whiskey at the house, and they had a big still over about 3 miles. I read what they call on the old Montgomery property then, and there's a man then making up. I saw him one Saturday afternoon. He said, "I'm going to be running tomorrow. Why don't you come over, and we'll talk." I said, "Well, I might do it," and that's Sunday. Down there, the children went off somewhere. I saddled my horse, and I go into the steel. I had to take me a pint of whiskey along, and I had a 22 rifle, and I rode over there. We started talking. He said, "Don't you want a drink?" I said, "No." I said, "You got some good beer?" That was the book that made the whiskey. "Has it got some as good as that as you ever drink?" So I said, "Yeah, I'll drink some of that." And I got me a can of that, and that's all I drank. I got sitting there talking to him, and I got to thinking about now if the law comes up and catches me here, I got a gun and a horse. I said, "They might take it on. I better get on home." So I thought, I had to go, and he pulled around and found a little old half a gallon. I had a 50-gallon barrel sitting up away from the steel, and it was about 2/3 full. And he just took that jug and pushed it down in and let it get full and stopped it up and gave it to him.
Yeah.
And the more I thought about it, the more uneasy I got. And I got on my horse. But just before I left, they had 5 or 6 great big old vats and hold 152 gallons of mash.
Yeah.
That's where they put the sweetening in the water and the cornmeal or whatever they wanted to make it work on. I passed by one of those vats. And they call them buckworms, but they weren't nothing but pure maggots. And that thing was just as thick in there as they could stick. And, of course, they probably let it go on too far and sour too much to make those things get in there. But I already drank my stomach full of, not out of that, but another one, and I didn't see nothing in that one. They even had a pumping to put it out in the pond to pump the water up there to you condensing that. The water will get pretty warm in there, and you got to kind of keep it cool down. Then it took a lot to set up those vats, you know. It take 3 or 4 vats, you'd have to have 400 or 500 gallons of 300 gallons at least of water. They had an old pitcher pump. The pipe run down the pond and come up, and then they had it upright, and the pump set up there. And they had a little, I believe it was a piece of inner tube. You could run to any one of the vets which made it handy.
Yeah.
And said the old man Hal Gannon's cows went over there one time. And just set it up right out in the open. And said they'd drink. It's kind of hard to believe, but they said that they'd drink a bunch of that beer and got tight on.
Well, have you ever seen a drunk pig? We laughed too. Danny's mother went to Salma, Chuck and I usually go up there, and Salma said a few days ago, a man, her husband had made some homebrew one day, and it wasn't any good. So they had a pig in the pen. So Margie just poured it all in the swill thing and had the children to take it down to the pig.
Yeah.
When we got up there, Margie said, there was something wrong with the pig, Dad.
It was, too.
Our pig is dying. Well, we all went down and looked at the pig, and the pig was lying in the pen, and he would lie there, and his feet just kicking, and on his side. And
he was,
we all thought sure that something was bad or wrong with the pig,
yeah.
And he was going to die. And the next morning, Danny was just a little boy then. They went down there, and they come back to the house, and they said, the pig's up and he's just fine. And it was a drunk pig.
He made some blackberry jelly one time and fermented. He drank a little bit too much of that and make you taste it.
Yeah.
And then the old one of my sisters made quite a bit of making wine. Blackberry, scarping on.
Uh-huh.
And then make what you call it, peach brandy.
Mama used to make that.
Mm. Boy, it tastes good going down. It didn't have so much alcoholic content.
And Mama would always make enough blackberry wine for her fruitcake each Christmas.
Yeah.
And just make enough to for that. She likes to pour the wine over the fruit cake, but I never like wine over poured over the fruit cake.
Now the law, of course, nobody could have a little still without everybody in the neighborhood knowing it.
I know. Well, yeah.
So it wasn't any secret, just an open secret.
Mm-hmm.
But now, the law didn't bother anybody too much, did they?
No, unless you got to overdo anything and get out and sell it. But if you stood in with the law a little bit and actually had it right, they wouldn't have a body.
Did you have malaria much out here?
No.
No.
Now, back when I was a kid, a lot of people had old systems, and they'd catch that rainwater, and some of them, oh Lord, they'd hold a tremendous amount of water. Well, maybe they'd have an open well too, but they used that system water to drink, and they'd get in there, and after a certain length of time, they'd get wiggletails and red mosquitoes.
Yeah.
No screens on your house or nothing. I don't know how people got along, but it seemed to survive, all right.
They just had a tough hide. I've seen that.
Do you think it was as many mosquitoes then as it is now? I guess I was about 9 years old, and we had mosquito nets. We didn't have to have screens.
Yeah.
We lived here maybe 2 or 3 years before the house was screened. But we had mosquito nets, and I can't remember mosquitoes being bad.
Yeah.
Like they are now.
When we first moved down here, that phone screen, it was open. And in the afternoon, you couldn't sit out there. Or the little yellow flies,
yeah.
Mosquitoes, gnats, and the hot flies. And I was looking up to make a little money one day on some bean nuts. That's the first thing I'm going to do is screen that for. And we really enjoyed it.
Well, that knocks the wind off, though.
Well, the strain wind, yeah.
It might be that I was too young to notice things then, but I can remember from being when I was small, we'd get outside and play, but I
Now, let's see. It was her sister, Lillian, I guess, and one of your daughters, and somebody else, and you said you wondered whether they'd come out alive or not.
Riding horseback. My youngest daughter, I don't know, I believe she's one of the most venturesome ones. She'd go help me drive a cow. And that horse just took care of us all I could do. Lawrence Robert never was such a, he's my son, you know, and he never was, he never did take to horseback riding very much, but he'd help. Back that time, all this country was open between here and Levy Lake. Old man John Fisher had some cows, and we had some, and they'd all mix up over there. Well, I could tell all, we didn't have but a few cows, 50, 75 maybe. I could tell I was by color mark, but he couldn't. He'd have to look at the mark. And I had this old gray horse, and he was a pretty good cow horse. When a cow turned, he turned. He didn't run me on the horse and turn around. Lawrence, I was riding him one day, looking at one of our cows and one of the feasted cows, and our cow turned back to the bunch, and the horse turned, and our dog kept on the straight. We didn't have any trouble driving this farm, get them started, and they'd come home. Lillian Gibson, I don't know why we was going up to the helm, but she and I was riding horseback. Y'all were in the wagon. And by that time the lake was so dry, we had a road across the prairie.
Yeah, we ride after we were married, you know, it's an awful dry.
And we started across that. She said, "Let's run a race." Well, that's all she had to say. And the little old horses could run just about the same speed. One place was kind of a sharp curve in the road, and I saw the whole country between her and the saddle. That horse come pretty near turning from her, but she stayed on it. Her daughter, she loves horses too, Martha. And she's out there one day, and I went want to go down there to get the cattle and right down here on the lake. She got on a horse and we started, and she was almost up in front of the cow. And I called her, "You come back in." As I was always taught to stay behind on the side of a cow, not get in front of him to try to drive. She didn't know anything about it.
Now you speak to him a good bit. Now he not a kin to anybody out here.
No. There was two sets of birches here. And let's see, they were kin to the Chamberlain somehow, weren't they?
Well, now Horace was kin to the old man Christian that lived in, that was, oh, used to own this place back up here. Old man Charlie Christian. I believe that Mrs. Birch, Horace's
grandmother
was
Mr. Prison's
sister. I'm sure that's
what it was. Well, now he'd been out here, he'd worked with you?
And no.
Hunted with you?
He used to be a big alligator hunter and frog hunter.
Yeah.
But I think he's about to give it up. Now, in the wintertime, he hunts. They got a camp down in Gulf Hammock. Him and his two son-in-laws.
Well, how much Indian blood did he
tell
you he had
in him? God, I don't know. This little bit Indian mixed up that
well,
summer.
Well, Horace looks like, you know, with high cheekbones, but he'll come home one day and I can't remember what Horace told me. He didn't like his grandmother was an Indian. Anyway, he has Indian blood in him. But they were all, his family were all big hunters.
All what?
Big hunters.
Oh, were they?
You talk around Levy Lake and all around.
anybody that's got a little interest in them, a lot of them had love to hunt.
Well, now, he's been at it a good while then, hasn't he?
Yeah. I don't know Horace's age.
Well, they were raised right up here on Lee Lake.
Yeah.
Born and raised up there.
Oh, really?
His daddy. I don't know him ever doing any work. Other than he was a self-made mechanic.
His daddy?
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Ramsey said he could take an old piece of machinery you or I'd throw it away for 10 years. He didn't want none of this modern stuff. He said he'd get it, and before you know it, he'd have it running. Later years, he had him a frog boat. And I think about all he did was fish and hunt alligators and frogs.
Oh, so Horace came by it not so sure as that, is it?
Yeah.
Horace's family were old-time settlers right here. His family, his grandfather Birch and grandmother Birch, been here ever since I was a little girl, so I can remember. And then the old man Charlie Christman, which was Mrs. Birch's brother, lived up here and had a house up here, and he lived here when my mother was a young girl. So probably the Birches lived here that length of time too.
Yeah.
But they used to grow strawberries back up here.
Yeah, strawberries and cumquats. He had his little cane patch too. I remember the old vet, but I don't ever remember Mill up there. He probably had quit with the syrup business before my time up here. He had that old thing sit right down close to the edge of the lake. Can you remember that? Well, we used to go fishing up there?
No, I should, because I went up there when I was a real small girl. We used to go up there fishing.
Well, they had a little home in a barn. He didn't ever do no great big farm, like we were taught on one horse farm, I reckon you'd say.
Mr. Christman is the one that screened our house for us when we first moved out here and had to screen. I remember he didn't have any teeth. He had his teeth to it. My daddy had big teeth, and he put Lillian up. She was a small girl then to pass Mr. Christman the toothpick to the table, which Papa should not have done, but he took it as a joke. Daddy was a big tease.
Now, you didn't have any trouble getting help like that, carpenters and all.
No, in back then times, most in and everybody had to work.
Yeah.
Do you remember what I paid old man Wetchcorn to help me build that house up there? Very little, maybe $2 or $2.50 a day.
Up there where the little doctor lives.
Yeah.
The best I can remember.
Now you built that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like all the time that he worked and helped you, that it was about $4.
And he had work. And if you stayed around, you'd work.
Yeah.
He was a little old dried up fella. But he knew what to do.
Now, Mr. Crider, he done a lot of work.
Yeah. He and I redid this room here.
Oh, really?
It was a plaster. It used to have plaster.
Yeah.
And we took all the plaster out and a little old batten and fixed our studs to where this ball board would fit on there. We had a miter box cutting this.
You mean you had it plastered and took the plaster off?
Yeah, it was all gone.
I see.
And got to cutting these trimmings up there, and he said, we did our room in our bedroom in there too, and just had that little quarter round in there.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't know how to cut this room. I was going to cut it by a miter box, and it'll fit. Oh, it won't. We're going to see. And I'd gotten enough where if I made a mistake, I'd have enough to recut. So, to be sure, I cut me a piece in the middle and put it up, and then cut me another piece and put it on the end, and it fit just like it was made to fit. He said, But he didn't know that. I didn't know it either, but I figured if one miter would fit, regardless of the size of it, another would fit. All you had to do was have your slopes, you know. That's it. But that's a good work back then. He'd come out here and he'd done it with us. Tommy gets reading and said, "Let's go." I said, "Let's don't. We're going to rest a while."
That's an awful lot of work for all these things and do things.
We just helped him, and he was a good worker. There was Camp Bannon a long time. And he was, I believe he was a mechanic on these little old rig Stratton and Wisconsin motors and things like that.
What was Mr. May like? He sort of had a hand in everything.
R.H. May?
Uh-huh.
He was a nail store man.
Oh,
and then he started farming here. They had a turpentine still that making up.
Oh, did they?
All this country out here was all turpentine. My dad-in-law had some. And I don't know. I reckon Ball Watkins had the hammer then. They had some turpentine back up on the east end. And then he ran a store that was Buck Weaver is now.
Yeah.
No, he first started in the old Feast building. That's that two, three-story building there.
The art center.
Yeah. I don't know why he moved on down there. That old building there known as Old Mott Building.
Well, I think he bought that after Mr. Mott died.
Right, yeah.
Because they rented
the
Mott home.
He was a typical Georgia cracker.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Let's see. Was Mr. Ball he come in here with? Yeah. And Chapman. Ball, I don't think May ever had anything to do with that sawmill, did he?
No. Yeah.
They had a nice big sawmill there.
I think he was bookkeeper
for all naval stores, and then Ball left,
and
Mr.
May,
I guess, saw about what I know. He come here walking.
Yeah.
And he
accumulated
right good bit.
Well,
Chuck,
Ms. May had an awful lot of money.
Yeah, Ms. May had some money.
Her family was very wealthy, and
well,
she invested that and handled that, and I guess made a good deal
off of that. And all right here in Micanopy. And then
he made a lot of money himself, but I have been told by people that I think
used
that her family was very wealthy.
He would work these old turpentine niggas, pay them off in Babbitt, and then they had to go back to the store and trade.
Yeah.
He made a profit off of that. Yeah.
Mr. May was a good man. I always liked him. He did us a good many favors.
Why'd you call him Georgia Cracker?
Because he come from Georgia. I never will forget one time I said they went somewhere, maybe up in Georgia, and went to a restaurant to eat. And they had a raccoon on the menu. And she said, "You know what happened?" I said, "What was his first name?" He called him R.H., I don't know what.
Bob May.
Bob May. And you know what Bob May ordered for supper? The raccoon. Yeah. He would eat most anything. Well, if he'd gotten a store, he didn't pay his clerks very much. But he's been some of them you only had on Friday or Saturday. And he'd get him over the house and let him eat dinner. And he'd tell you about what was the cheapest thing that was good to eat that he could feed him. That was how close he was.
Oh, really?
Ms. May had a real good Georgia cracker.
Yeah.
She stayed with her for years and years and years. And I think she was a wonderful cook. Charlie Cook's wife. What was her name? Susan.
One time he had some corn, and he always had some real good mules. And he'd take his turpentine mules and use on the farm. So the weed was so bad, he got a little old scratch hair and put a weed on it, and let a nigger go down every other mill to give the breakers a kind of a clean place to work in. And I said, you got the way you think. It's a good bit of a nigger, don't you? Knocking the weed down upon the break corner. He says, no, he says, it ain't that. I'm so damn scared my mule will get snagged with.
Yeah.
Put his mule in the nigger.
Now, Roy Duncan never, he wasn't, never accumulated anything. He was just a everybody knew him.
Yeah.
Mr. Miles Roy Duncan, father was a preacher. Preacher Duncan, I've heard my mother say.
Yeah.
And they used to live this place up here where Mrs. Perry lives now, across from Louis Springs. That was called the old Duncan place. And Roy Duncan went to school with my brother. They're about the same age. And then they moved away from Mickey. And we never heard anything from him for years and years. And then he come back into Mickey, I believe, in about the 1940s, wasn't it, Charles?
I don't remember.
And brought his son with him, Roy Jr. And it seemed like when you come back in here, he was a pretty rough character. And from then on, I heard some mighty rough things about him.
Yeah.
I never admired him.
Yeah.
But his father was a preacher, old Preacher Duncan. I heard my mother
speak. I remember there when I used to see him at Buster's place there. He, it seemed like he talked pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had a brother named John Duncan that he used to come see one of my sisters. But I don't remember him. I've heard him speak of him. And I heard Roy say in later years that I shouldn't speak ill of the dead. I don't guess they say not to you, but Roy claimed that his brother John took his wife away from him. But now, I don't know if there's any truth in that.
I'll tell you one thing I can say about him. When he was marching, he really kept those niggas in line.
Oh, did he?
He sure did, yes, sir. And he'd gamble with them.
Oh.
And he never, to my knowledge, he never did drink any amount of whiskey. But he'd let them sell it and he'd get a break off on that, you know, a bowl eater.
Well, now, there's a lot of niggas right there in Mickanopia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they weren't there way on back. They were scattered out all over the country.
All over the country, yeah.
Well, you mean the niggas?
Yes.
There was all
well, the niggas have always lived pretty close around the white people in Mickanopia, and we never thought anything. You know where Carlos Sheriff lives in Mickanopia?
Yeah.
Well, there's Negro homes back there. There used to be a colored woman called Lucy Commander and one called Jane Mack, Tom Mack's wife. And they were what you call nurses, I guess.
White folks, niggas.
When anyone had a baby, they went to their homes and took care of the mother and the baby. And they were almost like you'd call a practical nurse today.
Uh-huh.
And they were well thought of, and we respected them, and they respected us, and we were friends. And we had a lot of colored people like that around Mickanopia. And I know I've had some that worked for me that I thought the world was one old Lucy Patterson. She washed for me and ironed for years and years, and I couldn't have thought any more Lucy. But like I say, we, how good colored people we saw so much of.
Yeah.
And they were good to us, and we were good to them.
Now these,
they don't want it.
No.
Last old man.
Daughter got married before she.
When our last baby was born, Jimmy Daly's daddy was a doctor out here then. Well, he was a doctor for both the girls. And I had made arrangements with old, she was a mulatto, Anna Hard. She and her husband raised up a yard full of young men. She was good, and so I asked if she'd come.
Good.
Huh?
That was the mold good.
Yeah. She was just as clean as any white person.
Yeah.
I asked if she'd come out here and stay, and she said, yeah. I told her about when we thought the time would be. And I was in town that afternoon. We didn't have phones then. And her father come out there and told me, need to get the doctor and come on out. So I run down there and told Dr. Daly, he said, you go on and get Anna, and says, I'll be there time you get there. Well, I went to her house, and she was at Thrash's on Saturday afternoon doing a shopping. I went down there, and she got in the car and went to the house. She had a in the little old market basket. She had a little change of clothes in there. And I picked her up, and I drove on home pretty fast. I say fast, it was for old Model T time. And when I turned in up there, the house, David blowed behind me. He went there and made an examination and told me to get some hot water. And in an hour and a half or 2 hours of time, Marty was born. Well, I was hungry. And I asked Daly, Dr. Daly, I said, you, if I cook something, will you eat with me? He said, sure. And I went in and put on a pot of grits. Had a big old ham and I cut the round out of that. I cooked 6 slices of that meat. And I believe we had light bread then. I don't know what making it. Made a pot of coffee and fried 6 eggs. And we sit down and that rascal eat 3 eggs and 3 slices of that meat. And had a good fireplace there. He went in and propped his legs up and lit a cigar and he said, Tuck. He said, I've eaten a lot of meals, but he says, I never eat one I enjoy it anymore, man. He sat there a couple of hours.
We're talking about Anna staying with us, and she stayed right out there in the...
Now, that was Anna
Harden.
Anna
Harden.
Anna
Harden. Now, they lived down at the lower end of Mickey the West End, in a big two-story yellow house. I think it's been going down. They raised a large family.
When I told you about was living up here on the old Underhill place where Jimmy Rams lived now. And he raised, oh gosh, I don't know how many turkeys. He's the one I tell you about bar wagon. He went up there and bought them and brought them out here and shot them and gave them around for Christmas present.
Yeah, wild turkeys.
And the corn clapped them as wild turkeys.
Yeah, wasn't the name of that place.
Yeah,
you
place.
Said the other day you couldn't remember
it.
I couldn't either.
Underhill.
Mm. All that was in thick, well, all the high country was in thick pine timber. And down around the margins of the lake was all hammer. And Jimmy's painted all up.
Where did Slim Wheeler live? Most of the time you knew him.
He lived up in the hammock for a while. Lived on the old Crispin place. And then he finally lived over here at the John Bocknight place. For a while. He always bashed.
Always bashed?
Mm-hmm. He wasn't very much of a ladies' man. He loved food, cows, and horses. And he didn't have much to do with automobiles. He'd go anywhere, he'd go horseback.
Yeah.
I remember when Tuck and I was first married, we went to Gainesville to work in furniture. At that time, Tuck didn't have very much, and and didn't buy too much. We bought, before buying the table, the chairs, and we bought me a mahogany dresser. There was some furniture already in the house, because we lived up in Hamlet when we were first married, but the house that you told your brother lived in.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Bill Wheeler, next time I saw him, he said, "Is Max, Tuck tells me you're one to games and bought you some of that hog furniture." I always remember that.
See, we decided to get married. I had to borrow an automobile. And the man went to Kansas with us to get married. And her sister Ann. I'll come over here, and I wasn't afraid of old man Chitty, but I just, the nigga says I wasn't too brave around him. And I come in here and I told him we decided to get married and wanted to know what he thought about it. And Inez wasn't of age or something. He says, "I reckon if you made up your mind, that's the best thing, and I'd go along with." But he says, "I ain't going up that way." He says, "I'll call that judge." He knew that was judge good of him. He says, "I'll call the judge and tell him it's all right." And he didn't act like he appreciated so much. But I went and asked Miss Chitty, and she hugged and kissed me. She was glad to get rid of him. And then we come back, and the old man says, "Well, you all just make up your mind and stay here tonight." I thanked him and told him we'd made a ring and step in the hammer. Well, nobody else there but us and the other niggers.
Because we didn't let anyone know we went to the hammer because they were afraid to come out here in 30 years because they were afraid of my daddy. And the phone kept ringing and Tuck wouldn't answer. So they were trying to find out if we'd gone to the hammer. A lot of the young people said after and said that we didn't know you were in the hammer, but we'd sure come out there, but we sure wouldn't brave old man Sam Kitty.
Well, where did he keep his horses, Bill?
And they had a little lot up there in a little small pasture. After we got married, I had to go to the bathroom, so the place I knew the best was the courthouse. I went over there and run into another one of the old girls I went with. She asked me what I was doing in town. I told her I just had to come up there on a quick trip and I had to be in a hurry to get back.
He wouldn't tell
her
he just got married.
I didn't think it was any other business.
And he says when she heard he got married that she cried.
Then she made me go to the store and buy.
Now, Chuck, don't you tell that.
Old toilet set.
Chuck went to Coffin and bought an entire toilet set. You know, the bowl and pitcher and all of that. Now, he tells us that I made him do it, but I didn't even know he was going to buy it.
Toilet set?
Yeah.
It was a bowl.
We didn't have no nothing but a back house, you know.
They got a,
didn't call them slop jars, then they called them chambers.
Yeah.
And well, bowl and pitcher and a chamber and soap dish and I don't know what all it was.
Well, you never used that bowl and pitcher, did you?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, not with our little pump. Well, we got our water, we had a little wash pan and a towel hung about there, and that's where you washed your face and hands. And then when you wanted a bath, you had to get a tin tub. And
there was no indoor plumbing.
Well, you didn't live here.
No.
No, we lived up here in the hammock right on the lake that he told you that his brother lived. We lived there for about 6 months when we were first married.
Yeah. Well, when did you build the house down here?
That was
before Margie was born.
Before Margie.
Oh, later.
Mm-hmm.
We moved in there in December 1927.
Yeah.
Lawrence Raw was born here upstairs. We had an old horse doctor, of course. I tell Jeff about some doctor then, I called him a horse doctor. I wasn't thinking he was a doctor too, you know. Finally, he looked at me kind of hard, and I said, "Well, the exception to all rules." My mother was here. And it was cold as the dickens. And I had a good fire. I have a fireplace up there, and I had a good fire. And I was new at this business, you know. And And I didn't know what all was coming up. He sat there and had on a big old fur. He had a big fur lined coat and he took it off and spread it back on the rock. He was having himself a big time. And I had been a good bit of pain. I sat there and I didn't know what to do. Finally, mother called me out of the room and said, "You go in there and tell that old doctor to do something." Says, "He can help that girl." I went back and told him. He made an examination. And he believed in letting nature take its course. And so the Lord waited sometime in the morning, the baby was born. I never did use him no more after that.
He just sat back with his fur-lined coat.
Yeah, enjoying the warmth of the room.
I shouldn't say this because that's what they call this talk. We do Roseboro loves his tie.
Yeah.
And my daddy said he had plenty of tie in him. And they wanted us to use him because they didn't trust Dr. Daly because he was a young doctor at that time. But Dr. Daly was far the best doctor.
Man,
but my mother and daddy wanted us to use Dr. Roseboro because he was an older man.
I've been trying to turn this off and go on home, but every time I start to, we get off on
something. You can do what you want.
Something is that.
You remember, I don't know if you remember or not, I found a case with Marjorie Rollins about the things she put in a book about her. Were you around here when that happened?
No.
Too far back.
Yeah.
You knew where the Rollins.
Yeah.
Stadia lives on Cross Creek.
She said things in her book about her that I can't remember just how it was, but she sued Marjorie Kennedy wrong.
Yeah, so they were strong, yeah.
But I enjoyed her book.
My mother said that night it's taking so long for baby to be born. She says it must be gonna be a little lazy girl. But when it come up with a boy.
Yeah.
Put that on there. And don't ever move your wife in with your folks, or don't move in with her. My God, she did it both for a little while. My daddy was down out and went a garden in a little old place called Windermere. And they had a big old rooming house. And my mother was always pretty particular about her house. But that old house had bed bugs in it by the hundreds. And boy, we didn't enjoy staying there a bit. We kind of got rid of them.
Well, we only stayed there one night. We visited them in Georgia. Oh, wow.
Now, this is on Sunday. This is Sunday afternoon, the 5th of April, 1970, around Channel 1 over, around 6:30. 6:30 around Channel 1 over, around 5 o'clock late. Still rainy, just like it was yesterday. And I just played part of the tape yesterday and hear the rain in it. And we were sitting inside, we couldn't go out on the porch. And this is Channel 1 over, around 6:30, and this is Sunday, the late Sunday afternoon, 5th of April.
And he said he wanted some of the tape.
He'll get them.
How do you go about getting them? You can retape from this, can't you?
Sure, just copy them.
And, he's ensued, and he also told it. See, he owns across the road on out to where that fence line was graded, pushed out. And it's his adopted son, his wife's son, wants to buy him a little trailer. And put up that so he can come down on the weekend.
Yeah.
And I told my wife I was all for it.
Yeah.
Because they can stay up there and come down and visit. And
yeah. They'll be at home.
When they can come here, she just goes all out.
Yeah.
Got two little children.
Yeah.
Babies, you might say. And it's just a little bit too much for them.
Yeah.
I like to have them. I like for people to think enough of me to want to come to see me.
Now that's what you say,
I was just.
There's some people that you talk to on the telephone, and the time that you speak, you can recognize the voice.
Yeah.
And Then there's others that it takes a long time to recognize.
It takes me a long time. Yeah. Some people I don't recognize.
Now I've got a nephew down on the East Coast. He was chief of police, and he called me. I couldn't recognize his voice. And finally, I asked him who it was, and he said, "Gunner Kirk." And I recognized his voice right
there. Yeah. Now this, these windows were big. The man that built it thought he had tuberculosis.
Yeah. And I don't think he had. Where he lived, how old was he?
Oh, I don't know.
80 some years old, I reckon.
Old man.
He was a. Oh. Tried to be a doctor. Fine? No? What?
Well, I heard that when he was a young man, he did want to be a doctor.
He. Read all the literature, doctor, medicine, and all.
I don't think that his father wanted him educated to be a doctor. You know, they mostly thought about the land out here because his father owned a vast acreage out in here. Old man Henry Balknight.
And that went back to slavery time, too.
And old man Henry Balknight coming here from South Carolina in the 1840s. And he owned...
Oh, that's way back, isn't it?
I don't know how many sections of land that he owned in here. And then he was a brother to my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather was alive Faulkner. And he come in the early 1850s. And he bought land from his brother. And my mother was born on this piece of land that faces the road up here. You know, we showed you the picture when you were here before, the house and the tall orange trees. Do you remember the day that Florence brought her mother-in-law out? And the,
oh, yes.
And the orange trees.
That's a beautiful picture.
Well, my mother was born there. My grandfather, Balknight, moved to Texas. Went out to Texas and homesteaded some land out there. So my grandfather bought the old home place from his father. And that's where he brought his bride and they lived there. And had the orange grove. And we were talking about the cattle. I told Tuplet, thinking about it and hearing things that Mama talked about, I don't believe they had many cattle back in those days. They had the orange groves, and they raised cotton.
Oh, yes.
Because we have a piece of land up here in the field that's always called the gin house cut. And there was a gin house there at one time.
Yeah.
Most likely had a steam boil up there because it had a well or a hole dug out there, and there's a great big old boat. Oh, they're that big around. They just put down in the ground in rock or cement or something, and to tie the boiler to, or probably the engine.
Sure.
And the old hole there, and there's a pile of rock I reckon would half fill up this room, underneath the ground and on top and all. But that was way before it wasn't. In the building left when I first came up here.
I believe they only had just enough cattle for a milk cow, something like that, and probably a few maybe to eat, but I don't think they ever raised any cattle right in here at that time to amount to anything.
Never had thought of that.
To the grove, because I remember hearing Mama tell Methodist preacher come out to visit her after she had lost her eyesight and was talking to him about, she was reminiscing back. She said she thought maybe the big freeze might have been a blessing because the southern men were getting so lazy from the money they were getting from the orange groves.
Yeah.
But they had so much money coming in that they would, you know, have people to do the work for them, and I think they just played the country gentleman.
Well, now, were you brought up amongst any country gentlemen or that sort?
Oh, no.
You don't remember any of them at all?
No. Oh, I have heard them talk about things in my mother's time. In fact, they said there used to be a dance pavilion kind of out in front of this house where H.M. Brown lives now.
Yeah.
Out in front there, that they had dances.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Mr. Elvin Bruton told me the first time he ever saw my mother, that she was a young lady and my father's brother had brought her to this dance, and he said he thought she was about the prettiest girl he ever saw.
Yeah.
He said he was just a small boy, that he come with his mother and father. Oh, they really lived it up in those days. And I've heard Mama tell about hotels and things in Micanopy. Of course, they were gone when I got up.
Oh, were they?
Oh, you see, when the big freeze come, well, there's a lot of people who just couldn't survive financially, and those that did hold on. Our Uncle John Barr was one that stayed on and continued to make money and have groves. But there's a lot of them that I think they kind of lost like a man in business, I guess.
There's one of those hotels that's called... Carolina Hotel and what was that?
Tuscarora. But Mama said there was a large hotel down beyond where Thrash's store is now. She was a girl, but I don't have any remembrance of anything about that. But now the freeze killed the grove on Mama's home place right after she and my father were married.
Oh.
My grandmother had moved into Micanopy. She married again after her mother's father died. And he lived about 12 years. And then after he died, my grandma was out there with Mama and smaller children. And in those days, it seemed like that there was a few of the colored people that were kind of bad. And Mama said one afternoon they had been down to milk the cow, and when they were coming up to the house, that they saw a colored man run out the house. And when Grandma told Uncle John about it, why, he said she just couldn't live out in the country with those children by herself, because their closest neighbor was Mr. Milton Balknight, the house, the old house that's up here. And so Uncle John got a home in Micanopy for Grandma, and she bought it, and they moved on into Micanopy and put someone else out on the grove. And then when Mama married my father, then they moved down on the grove. And Mama said he had just got the grove in good condition and was bearing real good when the big freeze came.
And those groves did take the work.
Well, of course, Papa was a young man then and energetic, and because he had health.
And after they got up a certain age size, it didn't take awful much work and care then. But when you first started off, it was 4, 5, or 6 years then before you started reaping any benefit from it. And there's something else. They had little country schools scattered all over the country. In a graveyard. The little family graveyard right here, in front of our house, there's one down. That would have been an old sandboat night place. And then there's one over back of Ms. Brim. There's three right here. So they didn't have to go nowhere to plant somebody when he died.
Yeah.
And did you know Micanopy was the second oldest town in the state?
You mean United States.
But now this house, let me see, it was built with cypress shingles?
Covered with cypress shingles.
Covered with cypress shingles.
Now I don't know whether they were sold or rived. You know what a rye shingle is? You soil blocks and bolt it up, and you have what they call an old fro. And you make your break, they call it. Piece of block wasn't any good for shingles, and you drive them in the ground and make your break. Then you take that bolt and put in there, and you had this fro, and I've got one out there. Did I show it to you? Well, you take that bolt and put it in, and you had a Lee Mall, and you take that thing, and your bolt was in that shape. Well, your first shingles was kind of narrow, which sometimes on your roof would fit in all right. And then as you go back, you just drive that thing a little piece and pry down on that handle. That thing would always try to pick a good splitting timber. And you could drive out 500 or 600 boards pretty quick. And sometimes if you get a large tree, you can get 1,000 or 1,500 shingles out of it. And I think, I don't know, those that wasn't the same width with sawed shingles, it generally takes 1,000 shingles to cover a square of roofing. A square of 10 feet.
Yeah. Well, now you never done that yourself.
Yeah, well, I helped do it. And my father had he got out some to cover a smoker. And he made a break, and I don't know just how it worked, but you put your shingle in there, and you had a lever, you push down with your foot, and you take a drawing out, which made just about in the shape of a solid shingle. And you could do that pretty fast, too. And it made them go on your roof so much better. You kind of level and uniform.
Getting dry the other day,
yeah.
Before that big rain,
yeah.
And the ground was getting hard.
My boy's got a little place up here come by, and I remarked to him, I said, this is the first time this whole winter that I can remember that there wasn't water in the road going from here up to the hammer.
Yeah.
And he said, well, don't fuss about it. I said, I'm not. And the next day, that same day, wasn't it? We went up there and got wet. Yesterday we could go.
Yeah.
It rained and rained and rained.
Yeah.
Well, around here is usually pretty high and dry, but it's getting pretty sloppy now.
It's the land up here. The water gets away so fast. Now, you see all that water in the road out there?
Mm-hmm.
If it quit raining, the wind and sunshine for 2 or 3 days, it's gone. But up in that hammer, it has a clay subsoil.
Oh.
And boy, when it gets wet up there, it just got to sure enough drop. It don't go down much. It